Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible.com.
Get a free audiobook download at www.audibletrial.com/outnowpodcast.
Over 150,000 titles to choose from for your Android, iPhone, Kindle, or MP3 player. This week on Out Now with Aaron and Abe, we're talking Snowden and Blair Witch. Right, Abe? Abe? Abe?
Wait a minute, I forgot my introduction.
We are now recording, and this is Out Now with Aaron and Abe. I am Aaron, and Abe is unfortunately not here. He's taking a week off. Guy's busy. He needs a rest every now and then. But the Out Now is a film podcast where Abe and I normally discuss new movies weekly. We cover some various movie topics, jump into a mostly spoiler-free review, and then jump back into other fun movie topics. This is episode 255, and this week we got a double. We got 2-5, so we got two movies to talk about. 2-5-5 is going to be all about Snowden and Blair Witch, the latest films from director Oliver Stone and Adam Wingard. And joining me today to discuss Blair Witch and Snowden, we have, from Game Revolution, he's lost his Rubik's Cube in the woods. It's Peter Paris.
But I somehow solved the Rubik's Cube without even looking.
Okay.
You know, I can actually do a Rubik's Cube.
Okay.
Am I the only person on the board? Well, you can do one, right?
I've done one. I'm not all that excited to do it again. It was like this thing that just kept biting at me until I finished it.
Well, that's cool.
Because I'm a perfectionist.
Well, hey, everybody.
From Zachy's Corner and the Movie Film Podcast, he's been listened to, and he's listening to you. It's Zachy Hassan.
Good morning.
How are you doing today?
I am fantastic.
Great. Glad to have you back.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
For sure. Glad to have both of you here. As we all know, one Zachy and one Peter makes up a half of Abe. So, that'll be good for the show. this should be a fun episode. Well, we'll get Abe back soon enough. But before we get to the show, let's do some show notes stuff real quick. First up, we got a couple bonus episodes recently. First up is our monthly commentary track. We did one for Fallen, the Denzel Washington gem that you all likely remember, know very well, and are like, why haven't they talked about Fallen already? Well, it's finally here. Scott Mendelson and Brandon Peters and I, we all discussed Fallen for this month's commentary. Because why not? The three of us were fans of that hidden Denzel gem, so we went for it. Also currently on iTunes is our latest Out Now Nights episode. We talked about it last week, but it's still there, and heard a lot of good feedback on it, actually. It's our Out Now Nights where we talk about Stranger Things. Abe and I and my lovely girlfriend, Anna, we all discussed the Netflix series Stranger Things, and we had a lot of fun with that. And I've been hearing a lot of very nice things, particularly about Anna and her presence on the show, which she should be very happy with. And I'm always happy to have her on. Those two things are now on iTunes, so feel free to check those out if you haven't already. A lot of fun there, a lot of good insight from us, because I like to promote how good our insight is, apparently. So, moving on from that, speaking of bonus episodes, October is coming in a couple weeks, and every October we like to have special bonus horror episodes featuring, generally, Brandon Peters, Jason Coleman, and Jimmy O from Joe Blow. And we have a plan for what we're going to do for this October and the various bonus horror eps that are coming that way, so get ready for those, because those are a lot of fun to listen to as well. Last thing, Out Now, iTunes reviews and ratings. It's good to get those. Helps our show out, helps other people find the show. If you want to log on to iTunes, search Out Now with Aaron and Abe. You can leave us possibly a star rating and maybe even a written review of some kind, however long you want to make it. Doesn't matter. Just be happy to get them. Help us out on the old iTunes charts. So yeah, that's show notes stuff. Let's move on from that. Let's get to the fun, guys. You ready to have fun?
Let's do it.
Okay, let's get to know everybody. We're this week I will be asking a question to the panel. Better get to, set the tone for the podcast. Better get to know everybody. Thank you. It's just me asking a question this week. So, do you guys like camping?
I do not. I absolutely do not.
Is it because of you in particular or because of the things involved, especially given how many people you'd probably have to bring with you to go camping?
Well, there is definitely that. But also, I feel like we've advanced as a civilization to the point where we don't need to camp. So really, by sleeping outdoors, we're doing a disservice to the founding fathers who founded this country. And, we have nice things. I think we should take advantage of them.
That's I got distracted by the eagle flying behind you right now. How about you, Peter?
I don't like the outdoors. The outdoors The outdoors is just a place for me to go from one indoors to another.
Makes sense.
I think I've been camping once in my life. So
that's why you're so pale.
Exactly. And that was probably to impress a girl. So, yeah.
Look at me. I can set up a tent and unroll a sleeping bag.
Exactly.
I like camping. I haven't been camping in a little bit, but I do enjoy the notion of setting up a tent and sleeping outdoors under the stars in a campground. I think that's fun. I look forward to when I finally get to go camping with my lovely girlfriend. I think that'd be fun. See the stars at night. Like, it's nice. You can see shooting stars. You don't want to see shooting stars, guys. Your founding fathers.
I like shooting stars. I don't mind being out for, like, you know, like a 4th of July or something like that. I mean, but yeah, not really. No.
Okay.
Because you're not thinking of all the other things, the bugs, the, you know, all the bug spray, all that kind
That's
of stuff.
That's called prep.
And I don't know how good I'd be at making a tent. Like, I'd probably be terrible at that.
That's just simple instructions.
Yeah. I don't know.
Basically,
but yeah.
I'm itching for, guys, I got a timeshare. We're going camping. That's a surprise announcement right now.
Is that what this was all a lead up to?
You just have to, you know, put down $50, send it to me at a mysterious PayPal account that I set up. It will be all the way. All right. So no on the camping. I guess that's the general takeaway from it. Okay, well, with that in mind, that's how you play. No, everybody. Thank you. And so, yeah, I guess I'll be curious what Abe's answer is. I might have to hold on to this question just to know, to get a full spectrum. But I feel like everyone knows us now a little better because of our opinions on camping. So let's move on now to Out Now Quickies, which is where Abe would say TM, but he's not here. Each week at Out Now, we have a movie like, don't talk about movies you see, during the week, that's Out Now Quickies. Once again, Abe's not here, so we can't say TM. It's distracting to me. Zachy, have you seen any other movies this week?
I did. Well, we were just talking about it off mic. I watched Storks yesterday. This is the new animated movie from Warner Brothers, and it was. I did not have a good time with this one. It might be good for the kiddies, but it's one of those kids movies that's good for kiddies, but not for the grown-ups, in my opinion.
Alrighty.
Yeah.
Not all those celebrity voices. None of that did it for you.
No, didn't do a thing for me. Yeah, Andy Samberg. You know, it's funny because we're at a point now where it's like between, you know, Chris Pratt in Lego Movie, which I love, by the way.
Yeah.
Angry Birds. It was Sudeikis, I think, right?
Yes. No.
Wasn't it Jason Sudeikis?
It was. Oh, in Angry Birds. Okay. No,
In Angry Birds, I
misheard Angry Birds because I tried to forget that ever happened.
Yeah, and then it's Andy Samberg in this, and they're all like basically playing the same character. And you realize, like, there's no point getting celebrity voices for these things because it all just kind of sounds the same, you know?
I mean, I'd argue, given my love for the Lego movie, Chris Pratt brings something to it. I'd even say, as much as I dislike Angry Birds, I think Jason Sudeikis brought a typical Jason Sudeikis type character to that role.
If that's what you're in the market for, you know?
Well, I mean, I guess I'd argue, and I haven't seen it yet. I'll be seeing it with Anna tomorrow, but I'd say it's less egregious than when you get like Brad Pitt to star in a movie where it's like Brad Pitt doesn't have a comedic voice or like
I'll
a voiceover
that, yeah.
type voice.
That's true. Yeah. But the movie was meh. So okay. there's my review. Meh.
Okay. Peter, have you seen any other movies recently?
Do you mean in theaters or just watching anything recently?
It's anything that's not the movies we're talking about this week.
I rewatched The Matrix, which I had not seen in forever.
Yeah.
My girlfriend's a philosophy major, so she had never seen The Matrix, but she doesn't really like big action movies. So I was like, okay, well, let's see it. I'm just curious to see what she'll think. So I was kind of watching it to see what her reaction would be. She found the philosophy to be quite light, which is, that's true. It is kind of philosophy 101. But you know what I thought was kind of interesting was that I don't know when the last time you guys saw The Matrix was, but knowing that that movie is pre-9/11, that movie, I don't know how that movie would have been made post-9/11 because it is essentially like a pro-terrorist film, which I thought was pretty interesting.
Wow.
That to me, I thought resonated in a way that like it just, you know, didn't before. And you could also say Fight Club, which is also the same year.
There's a reason they don't show that on TV very often anymore.
Sure.
Yeah. But overall, good. You know, I mean, I still very much enjoy The Matrix, you know, so yeah, I liked it.
That's an interesting point to bring up about the Matrix, which we may be able to expand upon in some kind of bonus episode or even a commentary at some point. Although I know we did do a commentary for Matrix Revolutions, the third Matrix movie in the past already. I'd certainly, yeah, there'd probably be like maybe studio notes about how to address the nature of these people that are, you know, doing various,
well,
what could be considered terrorist acts. But
perhaps the big finale would not take place in a government building trying to get Morpheus out, where you're basically killing security guards, and like, I mean, maybe that would not have been, maybe that's the kind of stuff they would have pulled back on.
Perhaps, but I think that, I mean, like the movie establishes what's going on very well to, I don't think, to confuse anybody about what's happening.
True, but one of the things that I thought was pretty cool, and I like this, I respect this about the movie, is that
you're about to say the Matrix did something cool, which seems beyond my understanding, but go on.
No, I thought it was ballsy that, I mean, again, I don't know, Zachy and Anna and Aaron, I don't know how much you guys have seen the Matrix, but there's that scene where
I can assure you, I've seen the Matrix so many times, I know that movie pretty
well. So there's the scene when Neo is still in the training program, and he sees the girl in the red dress. Yeah. And Morpheus, that the point of that whole scene is to say, like, look, I know that these people who are plugged in, the people that we are trying to free, you know, they might be bankers, they might just, they're going on their lives. But the fact is, because of the way the whole agent thing works, they're the enemy. And so when you see that, when you do that government building thing, they are killing innocent people. That's right. To me is when the terrorist thing started coming in. I was like, wow, it's like Morpheus totally. Is very much like, nope. And then when I brought this up with a friend of mine, she's like, no, the innocent people are fine. I'm like, no, I'm like, they're very explicit. It's just like, nope, these people
they're very dead. Yeah.
Yeah, they're totally dead. It's like, no, they're dead. Like, so
they are sheep in all of this, since they're like born in these like those cell things. Yeah, I know what you're saying.
Yeah.
You know what I think is, and I'm one of the few people that's a defender of the entire trilogy. I like the sequels too.
I think Reloaded's a better movie than the first movie. So that there you
go. I think Reloaded might be better film. I really liked Reloaded.
This starts a whole other debate that'll take way too much time to get into.
I'm not a fan of the third one though. The third one I was like, eh.
I think it's the weakest, but I still think it's a better action movie than a lot of action movies I've seen.
Just to piggyback on what Peter was saying, I mean, I think that when you take the trilogy and Toto, I mean, it's essentially saying Morpheus is wrong, right? I mean,
that's why the second movie pissed so many people off, because the twist of that movie reflects less on the audience and more on the key character, which is Morpheus.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. I mean, I think that's kind of that is ballsy, in my opinion. I mean,
but also, is he wrong?
Well,
I mean, Neo does, you know, free everyone.
Think about it. I mean, ultimately, the trilogy is about making peace with the machines. It's not about destroying the machines, right? So,
That's true.
Well, I think there's a variety of ways I think to interpret it, which I think that's why I think it's a little hard to say the philosophy is kind of light. I think it's made to be easily digestible in that first movie, but I do think there's a lot going on, especially when you consider how the sequels take it.
Right. Yeah.
Right. But I mean, in the conversation I was having with her, it's really just the first movie she's going on. Well, for her, what it was more. They would bring up these ideas and then she would be like, oh, but it doesn't seem like they follow them completely through. And you're right. They do in the other movies, sort of. But I can't. I'm like, well, really, we're just judging the first film.
Which is fair. I mean, the movie, it's Joseph Campbell's hero's journey, just with a lot of like cool ideas mapped on
with wire foo
and wire foo. Yes.
Wire foo, right. Exactly. Oh, one thing she really didn't like that I do kind of agree is that, like, you know, a lot of the dialogue, a lot of the scripts really depends on the actor. Because really, if it wasn't that Lawrence Fishburne is so good in general and as being Morpheus, a lot of the lines that he says can be kind of corny. You know, I can only show you the door. You must walk through
it. Well, yeah, he speaks in isms. Like, that's his speech.
It's Fishburne-ism.
But there's a lot of the other supporting characters, like Switch and them, they're okay, and which is why it's fine when they die halfway through the film. Like, it's just like, and I mean, the guy Joey Palantino is like, he's a good actor, but a lot of the supporting other people, like, they can't pull, they get saddled with dialogue stuff that I don't, it's either the actors or the lines where it does feel a little flat.
Well, yeah, that's why you can remember five actors from The Matrix and none of them are those people that you're talking about.
Whoever Switch was, I don't know who that girl was.
No, but you can remember Reeves, Fishburne, Moss, Weaving, and Joe Pants. I mean, those are the characters you remember because they have all the great lines and things to do with their good actors.
Weaving and Fishburne, I think. I mean, I think Keanu is really well used in the movie, but really to me, the cadence that the way Fishburne does his dialogue and the way that Weaving's speech about the whole, you know, there is another creature that, you know, human beings are a cancer. Like, the way he talks, it's great. Like, that stuff's fantastic.
It's my favorite Weaving trilogy.
Right? Well, more than Lord of the Rings?
I know what I said. All right, that's what you talk about The Matrix, which I'm always happy to talk. It's The Matrix. I love The Matrix. But let's see. What did I see? I watched a movie called Battle Beyond the Stars.
Oh my gosh!
This is an old Roger Corman production.
You're going back for this one.
Yeah. So in a couple weeks, I'll be on a podcast talking about The Magnificent Seven. The Lamb cast. We'll be talking about The Magnificent Seven and the various iterations of that film, which includes Seven Samurai, the original Magnificent Seven, and this movie, and along with the remake, and this movie, Battle Beyond the Stars, which is basically the sci-fi equivalent for that same type of that Seven Samurai story. It was made like I think a year or two after Star Wars for a whopping $2 million, and every dollar's on the screen. It's not very good. I had trouble being awake while watching this movie. It is definitely a Roger Corman production, but not with the same amount of fun that I have with, I don't know, say Death Race 2000, which is more engaging. This movie, not so much. But that is something I watched, and I'll also shout out the fact that yesterday, September 17th, was Batman Day. And so among the various Batman activities my lovely girlfriend and I partook in, we watched a lot of the Batman the Animated Series, which is, of course, always fantastic. And so that was a lot of good catching up on to watch the Batman Animated Series again. Because I haven't watched some of those episodes in a while. So good stuff there.
So Aaron, by the way, you're talking about Magnificent Seven. Have you ever seen the TV series?
I never watched the TV series, no.
It's worth checking out, just if you're doing like a walk back through the various iterations of that brand.
Mm-hmm.
Michael Biehn is the star of that show.
When was the show? In the 90s?
This is like mid to late 90s. Yeah, it has Michael Biehn is a star. Ron Perlman is in it.
Huh.
Dale Midkiff. A bunch of people like familiar, you know, Eric Close.
Character actor type people.
Yeah, like people who you're like, oh, I know him, you know.
Huh.
A lot of those, but we're checking out. You know, it's very much
Biehn's the Yul Brynner character.
He's the Yul Brynner slash Denzel Washington character. Yeah.
What's the TV? Is it just every week they're preparing for to fight the rancher?
I mean, essentially, it's you have the seven who are in this town, and they're like every week there's some new thing that they're called in to do. Yeah, I mean, it's very episodic. It's not up to the bar of like what, you know, modern serialized TV, but not a bad show. You know, it's an interesting curiosity.
There's a lot of iterations of the Seven Samurai story. I mean, ranging from obviously Magnificent Seven to, you know, Pixar with the Bug's Life. Like, that's a very common story idea of like, we need help from people. Let's recruit some people to stop the evil that's in our
get a band of ne'er-do-wells together. And,
exactly.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. All right. That was it on Quickies. TM, let's move on now. Let's get to our trailer talk. We're talking about one of the newest movie trailers of the week, when it's coming out, what we thought of it, and what have you. This week, we are talking Live by Night. And this is the upcoming Ben Affleck film, directed film, starring Ben Affleck, based on another Dennis Lehane novel, correct? Previous films, Gone Baby Gone, and this film is set in Prohibition era. I believe it's set in Boston, because why not? It's Ben Affleck. And it involves Affleck, among others, in, you know, as, you know, mobsters or various people of the sort. It's Boardwalk Empire, essentially, in Boston. A movie now, directed by Affleck and featuring a number of other people. Start with Peter. Peter, what did you think of the trailer for Live by Night?
I thought it looked okay. I mean, I gotta say, because we have two Ben Affleck trailers, one we've seen for a while, I'm way more curious about The Accountant.
Mm.
But having said that, I've liked all of Ben Affleck's movies that he's directed. So I'm curious. I don't know. I thought the kind of color scheme that they had going on, I thought was kind of cool, but I don't know. It didn't really do too much for me. I mean, I'm curious about seeing how Elle Fanning will be and stuff like that, but I don't know. What did you guys think?
Zachy?
Well, I'm with Peter to the extent that, you know, the trailer didn't really blow me away, but it also, I feel like it didn't need to blow me away because I'm at a point where if Affleck is directing a movie, I want to see it. And so I was like, yeah, looks good. I'll watch it. You know, so it didn't move the needle too much, but it didn't need to move the needle too much.
Oh, I'm definitely going to see it.
Yeah.
I mean, of course. I mean, yes, because you're right. Absolutely. Because it is Ben Affleck directing, and he's never made, to my mind, he has never made a bad movie.
As a director.
as a director. Oh, no, yes, as a director.
Affleck's flawless acting career has never been in question before.
Because he did star in Phantoms or whatever. Like, so, but no, I didn't want to see it. I guess I'm just like, when I saw that Accountant trailer months ago, and of course it is kind of cheating to use a Radiohead song. I was just like, oh my God, this looks fantastic.
cheating like, to use Radiohead.
Well, like just you use that song, it's like, oh, this looks fantastic. You know, like it's kind of the opposite feeling I had of that Girl on the Train video. What I didn't like, is it a Kanye song that they're using in Girl on the Train?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I like Kanye, but I didn't. It kind of took.
Kanye's become a popular trailer go-to, apparently.
Yeah, but anyways, getting back to, is it Live by Night? Is that the
yes?
Even the title doesn't really, stick with me. I'm just like, eh. Well, of course I'm going to see it. I mean, Ben Affleck, yes, of course.
I know what you're saying too, because I feel like I'm less inclined to see this than when I saw the trailers for Gone Baby Gone or The Town or Argo. Like all those were like, man, I'm really curious about this, and it happens to be directed by Ben Affleck. Okay, let's see how that goes, and that progressively got easier and easier to stomach. Not that I never really had anything against Affleck anyway, but like just, you know, as his directing career has proven to be very fruitful for him, it's like, oh, this just seems like a no-brainer at this point. And yeah, this one, that I get, it's just something about the trailer is not as, I guess, enticing as other, you know, Affleck trailers or just, you know, period mob dramas, I would say, in general. This looks more on the lines of, not necessarily a reflection of quality, but like more on the lines of something like Gangster Squad as opposed to a must-see mobster movie that I saw a trailer for. That said, I mean, like you guys are saying, I mean, I am a fan of Affleck's directed films, and the positioning of this one, I don't know if it's presumptuous for them to have like a limited December screening, you know, the release followed by a general release in January. I don't know if that's supposed to like say like it's really good, that's why we're releasing it this way, or just like they're just assuming that will be the case because it's Affleck directing. But I'd like to be more confident than not in thinking that, you know, the guy that's made consistently great films, including a Best Picture winner, could probably make another one.
Yeah, I would agree.
It's funny you bring up The Accountant. I think I'm more excited for this than The Accountant. Mainly because I feel like I see through The Accountant as like it's their second chance to make that version of Good Will Hunting they originally had.
Wait, what?
Right, I see what you're saying.
So in Good Will Hunting, the idea in that script was that originally when they were writing it was that they had like the Matt Damon, you know, as a genius person, and that would lead into him joining the CIA and like doing some kind of mission type stuff. And that any like reference that there's like that giant monologue where he talks about like if he took like an NSA job or whatever. And they when they were shopping that script around, I think it was the Weinsteins, they said take out, you know, get rid of this stuff and focus more on the child, you know, on the MIT genius stuff. And so they made that movie. And they cut out everything involving what seems to be what The Accountant is, which is that entire.
I feel like that was Rob Reiner that said that.
Was it Rob Reiner? Yeah, that's right. Okay, that sounds weird.
That's interesting because when I saw The Accountant trailer, I had just rewatched Good Will Hunting like last month. So that's funny because when I was watching the Good Will Hunting, I was like, is his friend Will Hunting who did not join the CIA? Like, I thought that's so weird.
Yeah, that was that's where they're going with that script before, which is basically an account where it's like, you know, this math genius who's doing missions for the CIA. It's like, oh, he finally picked up that other half of the plot line, I guess.
It turns out Chucky was just as gifted as Will, and without his friend around to give him focus, he,
yeah,
is what happened.
Or, you know, they just recast Will Hunting, and on his way driving to Minnie Driver in California, he got picked up by the CIA. He's like, look, you're going to join us whether you like it or not. They become the accountant. Anyway, Live by Night. Like, you know, I do, like, if Affleck's going to make a, you know, a neo-noir, I'm all in for that, like, regardless of what the trailer's telling me. So, like, and it's not like it's a bad, I don't think any of us are saying it's a bad trailer, right?
No.
It's just like it feels, yeah, compared to other things, it seems a little less compelling than it could.
Yeah, I mean, it looks totally fine. You know, that's my, like, I'm in, but, you know, it's fine.
And it's kind of, you know, and I think, like, Argo did this for sure, where it's like every cast member is someone you seem to recognize from something. Like, that's what it seems like with this movie. It's like he just hired everybody that's a character actor in Hollywood for this one.
Right.
But yeah, Live by Night opens, I believe it opens December for limited release, and opens wide at January 13th. The Accountant opens like in a few weeks, I think, right? Like October 14th, I believe, something like that.
Yeah.
So yeah, plenty. That Affleck's not stopped working, apparently, since he's like currently, you know, being Batman also. So he's keeping himself busy. Let's move on now. Let's get to our that was trailer talk. Let's get to our first film review for Snowden.
Deputy Director of the NSA offered me a new position.
Can you tell me anything about it?
You know I can't.
Find the terrorist in the internet haystack. You're making people very happy.
Thank you.
You ready for a little action?
Oh, this looks juicy.
How is this all possible?
Think of it as a Google search, except instead of searching only what people make public, we're also looking at everything they don't. Emails, chats, SMS, whatever.
Yeah, but which people?
The whole kingdom, Snow White.
The NSA is really tracking every cell phone in the world.
Most Americans don't want freedom. They want security.
Except people, they don't even know they've made that bargain.
That should have been some of the trailer for Snowden. Oliver Stone returns with another film fit for a man who enjoys a good conspiracy. Snowden is a biopic that goes over the young life of Edward Snowden, going back to his early days as a special forces recruit into his time at the CIA and eventually into his work as a contractor for the NSA. The film chronicles Snowden's disillusionment with his government, leading to his drastic actions that turn him into a whistleblower. The story is framed by his Hong Kong hotel room confession, which happened to be when had filmmaker Laura Poitras making her documentary of the events, which would soon become the Oscar-winning documentary Citizen 4. Let's start with Zaki. Zaki, what's been your thoughts on Stone's recent output, and where you are at with Snowden?
So, you know, I feel like there was a time when Oliver Stone, every film that he released was an important film, even, you know, in that it generated a substantive conversation. And I feel like that hasn't been the case for, I mean, at least 10 years, maybe longer. I mean, I feel like Alexander, when was that?
2005 or four or five. Yeah.
2004.
You know, I mean, that 2004. So, I mean, that was a stumble for me. It didn't do anything for me. And then, you know, World Trade Center just kind of came and went. And I the last movie of his that really stayed in my consciousness was Any Given Sunday for me. And I feel like in that sense, this is a return to something a little bit more substantive, where I hope that there will be a social conversation about it. But the movie itself did not work for me the way I hoped it would. I felt like it was too long. I felt like it meandered, and it focused too much on Edward Snowden himself, when he himself did say, and even says in the film, that I'm not the story. So I thought that was kind of a perplexing choice, given the conversation Stone obviously wants to have about privacy and about government overreach, etc.
Peter, how about you? What are your thoughts on Stone, and where are you here?
You know, I did not know too much about Snowden beyond just a very, you know, memes or just things I would hear, you know, off the internet. But I never really read an article about Edward Snowden, and I never saw Citizen 4, which I heard is terrific. Having said that, I found the movie to be totally entertaining. It moved well. I thought Joseph Gordon-Levitt's affected voice actually worked better than I thought it was going to, because I thought it was going to be really annoying. But you know, I gotta say,
the two things that got me was that I would say is a debit is that while it was totally entertaining and it moved fine, I don't really think there was anything very kind of to what you just said. I don't really think there was really too much to what the NSA is doing and trampling on privacy and stuff that I didn't pretty much know in like 30 seconds. Like wasn't really much that they dug into where I was like, oh, that's kind of fascinating. You know, like it's funny because there's a scene early in the movie where Snowden, it's a very Oliver Stone thing. Snowden and I forgot what is Shailene Woodley? What's the girlfriend's name?
Lindsay Mills.
Lindsay are at a protest rally. I was like, oh, this is so of course, born on the 4th of July. It's like such a moment that Oliver Stone. And at the time, he is conservative as she is liberal. And by the end of the movie, he becomes more hopeful about Obama, even though he does become disillusioned. It's weird because that kind of back and forth of politics and how do we feel about issues, to me, that's the stuff that Oliver Stone in his heyday, he can do really well. And it's weird because I don't know if I feel like this movie, you've got the conversation there and you've got the scene where he's hunting with his mentor guy. You've got a couple scenes where they kind of are wrestling with issues, but yeah, it doesn't, I don't know, it doesn't really, for me, ever make me question anything. And the other thing I want to say is that as good as Joseph Gordon-Levitt is, and he is good, the portrayal of Snowden, and again, I don't really know this guy, but the portrayal of Snowden, he's honestly just this good guy, which frankly is kind of boring. Like, I agree. It's funny, I know this is not, these shouldn't really be related, but like a movie like Steve Jobs, where you have a person who's a visionary, but can be a real asshole, to me, that's more dynamic. I'm just like, well, that makes him an interesting person. With Snowden, I'm kind of like, well, he's doing the right thing, and okay, like, and it's weird. It's a weird, I mean, think about Ron Kovic, who goes into Vietnam all pro-America, and becomes this very vocal and very angry man. To me, that's kind of interesting. That's an interesting kind of character. So I don't know. I think it's okay. I don't, you know. So but
I think I think that's the problem with Snowden is that it's, you mentioned earlier, like he's not the story, and that's a key issue with the film, which is not a, it's not a bad movie. It's just not one that has much to really latch onto, because despite being, you know, over 2 hours and telling us this kind of grand story of this, you know, this what 33-year-old's life of, you know, everything that he went through, he's not inherently interesting as a person. Try as Jiggles Joseph Gordon-Levitt might to make him interesting, like he's just I'll also say the accent did kind of bother me just because it seemed to wear off whenever he got louder. Like,
yeah, I agree with you.
He doesn't have an accent anymore when he gets louder. But I think this is 2 years in a row where the documentary that won an Oscar was a better source of understanding this movie than Joseph Gordon-Levitt ended up making.
Yeah, I watched Citizen 4 last night after seeing Snowden.
And
how was it? That was my exact thought. I was like, this, people should watch Citizen 4.
Watch Citizen 4 and watch Man on Wire. But the difference with The Walk and Snowden is The Walk at least has a really great 3D spectacle aspect to it that you can enjoy, despite regardless.
That's what this needed. We needed in 3D, we needed him pulling the thumb drives out.
Well, obviously, you're joking, but like, you know, Oliver Stone is capable of doing something cinematically interesting, and he really doesn't here, which is what surprised me the most.
You know, it's weird, though.
You talked.
go ahead.
Like, you know, Oliver Stone's a director who knows how to, you know, do a lot of different things in one film to make something, you know, wild to watch or incredibly engrossing, or regardless of if you agree or not, just like, you know, an interesting stance on how to handle a topic. And there's just none of that here, really. Like, you can get like a sense of what he's trying to kind of say in it just because the film, you know, caters to a certain direction because it's a film, that's what it's doing. But there's no, like, there's, like, one, like, standout, not standout, but there's one, like, cinematic highlight for me, which is a scene where Reese Fons is, like, literally embodying Big Brother because his giant face is projected on a screen in front of Snowden as he's talking to him over, like, Skype or whatever. And it's like, where's this Oliver Stone that really makes these kind of cinematic choices more overt? Because it's not as if I need him to, you know, be too on the nose or incredibly subtle, but there is a director that I've seen before do things that are really interesting on film, and I just don't see any of that here. It just feels like a stone that lost his edge in a film that seems like he could easily get back the kind of cinematic mojo he had when he made Platoon, when he made Wall Street, when he made JFK or Natural Born Killer, you know, those films especially, you know, much more controversial or what have you. And none of that's here. It just feels like a very soft Stone movie.
Yeah.
Well, no, it's just so funny because I was really chomping at the bit, and it's funny because you said exactly what I was going to talk about, except you liked it. I didn't like that scene where it's the weird Big Brother oversized cam. What's the actress' name?
Reese DeFans.
You're totally right. It is Oliver Stone.
But it's so
over the top. I was like, oh, come on.
It's over the top, and even what he's saying in that scene should be very obvious to the person that's discovered that the NSA can look into everything.
Right.
Like, what he's trying to communicate to him in that scene is that we're watching you, and it's like, well, yeah, that's why you're disillusioned to begin with, because everything's being watched. So, of course, you're being watched. How is that a surprise to you? Like, it's not a huge reveal, but it's more of the idea behind that scene of how he's going to shoot it. That's at least him trying to do something, where I don't see him really. Beyond making a competent film, which it is, he's not doing anything that's all that ambitious.
Hmm. I would agree. I agree.
And while there's, you know, the movie was supposed to come out last December, and it was pushed due to, quote-unquote, there were too many visual effects that we needed to get done, I don't know what, you know, the nearly a year's of post-production work really added to this film, if that's supposed to be true. Like, I don't know what suddenly, you know, made more sense in the, you know, the edit here.
Can I ask a question as people who've seen Citizen Four? Another thing I would have loved the movie to do more is it's a thing I call in movies where if you have a person if they're a hacker or tech or they're a race car driver or whatever, there's a thing where movies can give you that like know-how. Like, I mean, you really can't teach someone to be a race car driver, but in good racing films. There are things they tell you where like, oh, the character needs to learn about drifting or whatever. And you feel as an audience member that you're kind of learning. Like the only thing in this movie is, yeah, he knows how to use a search engine. And I was like, well, that's not fascinating. Like in Citizen Four, does he go more into how they assemble data in a way that's like, oh, that's kind of interesting. That's how they do those kind of, do they do a little of that? Because I think that would have been interesting. That makes sense.
I mean, it's more of just a really long confessional, but because it's not focused on a techie's. Am I right in saying that, Zachy? Like, I haven't seen it in a while.
That's right. I mean, honestly, I think what the documentary does is focus on the implications of his revelations rather than him specific. Like, it's, you know, I mean, I think that's the key thing here is that the movie starts. If we don't know who Edward Snowden is, we know at the beginning of the film where he's at. So it's a 2.5 hour walk of trying to get back to where we already know he is. And I was just like, I just was not engaged by that, you know.
And you know, I know what you're saying, Peter. Like, there's other movies that like something like, I don't know, The Social Network. I think does a good job.
Well, of course, that's amazing.
And you know, obviously, yes. When I speak of, you know, 5-star movies, there's automatically, you know, a different reaction. But you know, that's a movie where you're not necessarily learning all the ins and outs of how to do these things, but it certainly takes you on the ride that is what they're trying to accomplish and the means of which they're going through to do so. This movie, yeah, like it is just Snowden walks into a room that he's not necessarily entitled to be in because he gets invited and learns how to search things based off a private search engine. Like that's the crux of him learning why.
Well, and to Peter's point, I mean, the film sanctifies Snowden to a degree that, you know, maybe it's true. I mean, he seems like a good guy, right? But and insofar as drama goes, I mean, it's not particularly compelling because he's not portrayed as a flawed character so much as somebody who's dealing with society's flaws.
No, the crux of his character as far as what makes him challenging is that he really works too much.
Right.
Since the movie's so indebted to focusing on his
relationship with Shailene Woodley. That's the flaw. He just won't have sex with her.
He's always working and she gets angry. And I don't know what I think the problem is that there's not like enough. There's not enough story here, like, because it's not nothing's. I don't know where else things will go in the future, but it seems like in the future there could be more of a history to really delve into as opposed to just this event of what pushed him to this point.
Well, Zach,
Okay. Yeah, go ahead, Peter. Sorry.
Well, no, Zachy, like, again, I haven't seen Citizen Four, but I like what you're saying, that you're saying that Snowden himself, it's true, he does say this in the movie, that it isn't really supposed to be his story. It's more about he wants this information out and he wants to create a conversation and he wants the public. And you're right, the movie itself is so focused on just this one man, as opposed to, like you said, Citizen Four, the implications of what all that means. That might have been way more interesting.
I think so, yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think that Oliver – it's pretty clear that we know from Oliver Stone's personal politics that he's 100% on board with Snowden. And I think he wanted, either consciously or unconsciously, to create a hagiography about this person who he considers a hero. And I think it's kind of he overlooked in trying to do that the broader story, which is still ongoing, by the way, because the end credits sort of make it appear like, oh, and, you know, look at everything Snowden accomplished. It's like, yeah, but everything that he talked about is still a pressing concern. I mean, nothing's fundamentally changed.
And that's why, right. You know, it seems, you know, it's a too soon type movie as far as what it's trying to convey. And it's weird that Stone chooses to do this. And, you know, it's not like it's Open Road. It's not like it's a major studio. So I wonder, like, were there a variety of notes of telling him what he could and couldn't do? Or, like, is he operating on his own means? The budget's not super high on this movie, but it's like, why does Stone feel so neutered in this movie? That's what kind of lost me here, because it's like, it's essentially a Wikipedia movie. You know, it's everything you can read that's been dramatized with, you know, big actors or what have you. Yeah. But it's like, it's not teaching me anything I couldn't find out already in some way.
Well, it's funny, Aaron, because you brought up The Social Network. I mean, that's why I really got to watch Citizen Four. But I guess I also wonder if, like, is the creation of Facebook and social media and stuff, is that just more inherently interesting than kind of in Snowden, the program that basically can look on everyone's lives? After a while, it kind of feels like a one-trick thing. It's like, and that's essentially all it does. Whereas with the Facebook movie, there's a lot of elements to what that is, to what creating the social media. And of course, I'm not even talking about the court case and all that kind of stuff.
Well, for one thing, you talked about Steve Jobs early as far as characters that are interesting. Jesse Eisenberg's Mark Zuckerberg character, you know, that's another interesting character to watch, along with the other people around him as well, the Winklevoss twins.
Oh, yeah, they're
Sean,
great.
Sean Fanning. Like, there's, you know, there's characters in that movie, and they're all wrapped inside of this quirky Aaron Sorkin screwball comedy. Like, so, the movie itself has so many other things going on that the fact that it's about Facebook is almost besides the point. That said, you can also read into the various things the movie does with Facebook. So there's an entire movie there that's compiled of a number of different ideas, where this Snowden movie is just, here's this guy who's pretty much in every scene of the movie, and he's not very interesting, but let's follow him anyway.
Right, which, and I just thought that another thing that the Social Network kind of gets to do is you have a character who, as I recall, Mark Zuckerberg, while I don't think he's poor or anything, he is clearly someone who wants to be in a higher station in life, right, as I recall.
Yes,
and in Snowden, it's pretty clear that he's making a lot of money. We don't really know how much he loves the money. I think he's more of a workaholic, but that instance of, like, being in a different kind of world or a different class, yeah, that's just not there. Like, I mean, that's another layer that you get to add with the Sorkin, with the Social Network thing. So,
I mean, I think a better movie could have put even more emphasis on the fact that Snowden doesn't care about what he's, you know, giving up or what he's gaining from doing the things he does, but it tries to tell a very straightforward story, and then it tries to milk drama out of the when he actually does take information from his workplace and whatnot, and it just falls flat because I don't have much investment in it. Like, I already know what's going to happen, for one thing, so that doesn't help, especially because even without, you know, knowing things already based off my own knowledge, the movie, you know, is set around a framing device, yeah, that, you know, lets you know exactly where he is and what's going on. So it just,
oh, okay.
There's in addition to the information being told to me not being all that, you know, interesting, the movie itself doesn't seem to know how to make it. It doesn't seem to know how to compensate for the fact that if you already know stuff, what else is it doing?
Right.
I mean, the Scott Eastwood character to me is kind of like epitomizes the problem I have with the movie. And obviously I'm not, of course I'm not a fan of, you know, even though I have my Xbox One Kinect that has a camera on all the time or whatever. Like, it's not like I'm a fan of that, but
I mean, I'm watching you right now as you're talking about this.
Right. Podcast, so. But I mean, but the Scott Eastwood character, you know, in the last part of Snowden, I mean, that could be an interesting character, and he's pretty much just the corporate jerk guy, you know, like, I don't care about privacy, it's war. And I'm like, all right, well, that's
he plays a Scott Eastwood type character.
The limited amount of movies he's been in, it's already a Scott Eastwood type character. You're right, yeah. But yeah, it's just like, well, that's not. And then, wait, by the way, in that scene right before Snowden has another one of his epileptic seizures,
yeah,
is the guy who's talking? There's sorry for people who haven't seen Snowden yet, but they're basically doing like a luau kind of party thing.
That's not Tom Hardy, Logan Marshall.
Right. Is it the guy from The Invitation?
Yes, it is.
Yes. I was like, is that the Tom Hardy guy? I was like, yeah.
Yeah, that's not Tom Hardy.
Not Tom Hardy.
From Prometheus also.
Who's the guy? Is the guy who introduces Snowden to all this stuff? Who he keeps running into?
His name's Ben Schnetzer. He was in Warcraft. He was the young magician guy in that.
Oh, that's what I saw him in. Okay.
That's what it's from. I knew I'd seen him before. Yeah, okay. Yes.
Yeah. He was the best character in the movie.
Yeah,
like,
he's good.
He felt like a real person.
Yeah,
I agree.
And I guess Tim Oliphant too by default, just because he acts like smarmy Tim Oliphant. he was Tim Oliphantastic in this movie, that's for sure. And Nick Cage wasn't like Nick Cage doesn't have much to do, but it's like, okay, Nick Cage is here. And he's like, he's warm and fun.
No, and the guy that Reese, I keep forgetting how to say
Reese Fons, the lizard. There?
I mean, no one's really bad in the movie. I mean, like, yeah, they're all.
Yeah, no, yeah, it's not. Yeah, I mean, you have a bunch of good actors here for the most part, and so it's like it's not surprising that it's, you know, decently acted. It's just none of them have much to. Zachary Quinto kind of got on my nerves. Like, dude, you're just like tough talking. Like, stop like yelling. No,
I thought it was weird that they hired Melissa Leo to be the documentarian, which of course becomes Citizen Four, but she really has nothing to do. I mean, like...
Well, I mean, because it's trying to go over true events, and since a lot of the pivotal stuff happens in that hotel room, you gotta have someone playing that character.
Right, and I guess they're just like, well, we'll put her in because she's a name. But it's just like, it's weird, because it's like, she really doesn't have much to do. It's like, you know, she's a good actress.
Well, otherwise it'd be like, it'd be Jiggles, Tom Wilkinson, Zachary Quinto, and then just some random person. Like, you need to cast somebody in the role.
Yeah.
You need an Oscar winner.
And she's, you know, it's like there's a maternal type nature to her character. Like, that's what they're going for. I don't know if there's more deleted scenes or whatnot, but that's ideally what they're trying to accomplish.
I mean, it's interesting because there's not much. I mean, Shailene Woodley is, I think she's quite good. She's good. She's good in the movie, essentially being the girlfriend, but she's good. But Melissa Leo's character could have been another interesting kind of female, especially she's a documentarian. Like, you could have done something with that, but. I mean, and look, the movie's already long, so, but, yeah.
All right, so it sounds like we're all pretty, not necessarily negative, but it's just more like, what is there to say about Snowden, really? Like, we're kind of, like, just mixed on it, where it's a
6 or a 7, you know? You can watch it on Netflix. It's like,
okay, well, if that's a 1, would you say people should see Snowden?
I mean, my girlfriend, she's a huge Snowden person, and she had a pretty good time. She really enjoyed it. Obviously, she already knew everything, so it's not like she learned anything from it, but she really enjoyed seeing the dramatic drama. So I guess, if you're into Snowden, it's fun.
Zachy?
I mean, I would say that if you're coming in completely cold, watch Citizen 4. If Peter's girlfriend situation, I would say probably Netflix.
Yeah, I would say Netflix as well. It's just like it's less to do with just like the subject matter and just more with what Stone tried to do. Like I wouldn't say that I was walking into this movie thinking, man, Oliver Stone's gonna, you know, he's gonna turn over an entire new leaf and get out of this funk that he's been in for like the past 2 decades. But at the same time, it's like, well, he didn't like, it would have been nice to see something new from him, but he didn't really offer anything. So it's not necessarily disappointing, because I wasn't thinking, man, this is going to be one of the best movies of the year. I'm not a huge Stone fan. There's movies of his that I like a lot. We'll get to that later on. It's just kind of like this happened kind of movie, which is a lot of Stone's recent films, essentially.
Yeah.
All right. Let's move on to our next film, which I know, Zach, you have not seen. Peter, you have, though. So, Zach, feel free to chime in when you want to.
Okay.
No problems there. but now we're going to talk about Blair Witch.
Do you believe in the stories about the Blair Witch?
Oh my god. Oh, they're everywhere. What was that?
That should have been some of the trailer for Blair Witch. After some trickiness regarding the latest feature from The Guest and Your Next's Adam Wingard and Simon Barrett, it turns out The Woods is actually Blair Witch, a new entry in the Kids Go to a Haunted Forest franchise. Disregarding 2000's Book of Shadows, this film is a direct sequel to 1999's large indie hit. It follows the younger brother of Heather from the first film, who enlists his friends to help him search for more info regarding her disappearance. Joined by a couple more locals, the group head into the woods, only to find plenty of danger still lurking out there. Peter, what's your thoughts on the Blair Witch project, and where are you coming at with this new one?
I'm a huge fan of the Blair Witch project. I know that it has some haters now, but I saw it when it came out opening weekend, mm-hmm. and I loved it. Some of my friends did not. I was in like the third row, and my one friend got sick and everything because of the shaky cam. But I thought it was terrific. And then I did not visit it for a long time. I just, for some reason, didn't get the DVD or Blu-ray. And then a few years ago, it was on like Netflix. And I was like, oh, I haven't seen this in a long time. And I was a little worried because I was like, I don't know if it's going to hold up, because is this going to be like a stunt? But I really liked it. I was just like, wow, this really holds up. I was like, this is really good. So I was pretty excited about seeing Blair Witch. What do you think of the Blair Witch project?
So I'm similar to you, actually. I had not watched it since seeing it originally. And I was not a big fan of it. Maybe it was, I can't exactly answer my 1999 brain, but maybe it was because of the hype being put behind it. That might have had something to do with it. Which is, you know, it's neat because I'm much more adept to found footage type films now. Like, I tend to enjoy them quite a bit, actually. Like, I generally enjoy the Paranormal Activity franchise, which I believe you do as well.
Yeah.
And so, like, and, you know, things like Cloverfield or whatnot, like, I like these, and Rec are another key examples of these. I like these types of movies, but, you know, back then, whether it was a hype or just a lack of, I don't know, patience or whatever you want to say, I just wasn't into what the Blair Witch Project had to offer. I think it had some effective moments, namely, you know, towards the end, but it was just, I don't know, all the bickering and whatnot just kind of wore me out after a while. That said, I watched it again recently, as in this week. I paid for the HD copy to watch it, because why not watch the Blair Witch Project in HD as it was intended? watching it, I could certainly admire what it was doing. I could admire the novelty of it at that time. And, you know, even especially with, like, the marketing for it, where they tried to convince people that they got the people, you know, despite there being a major motion picture that you're paying to see, these people really died. Like, there's something about that that's kind of fun as far as what they're trying to accomplish with selling this movie. But, and watching it, like, it's, you know, these kinds of movies have gotten better, obviously. This is kind of the... It's the prototype for models that did things a lot better, which I include this movie, which we'll talk about as far as quality of these things goes, you know, filmmaking, what have you. But, you know, it has its rough edges or whatnot. And so it's more like I can admire what it's trying to do more than I actually liked it. I guess that'd be my takeaway. Before we get to our thoughts on this new film, I guess, Zach, any of your thoughts on the Blair Witch Project?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I went to see it opening night, I remember, back in 99, and I remember the hype machine before and after, and I didn't like it then, and I haven't revisited it since, and I almost wish I had seen it when it was in its sort of viral video stage before its theatrical release, because I think it might have been more effective for me, but it just didn't do anything for me. So the fact that they made a sequel, you know, back then was puzzling, and then the fact that they did one now is even more. I'm like, who was asking for this, you know?
Well, I can see why that would, like, you know, given all the various revamps of movies, it's interesting that this is one of them that got in there, you know, along with, like, you know, Creed or Jurassic World. Like, Blair Witch was the next movie to kind of revisit as a legacy sequel of some kind.
Right.
You mentioned Book of Shadows, you know, the sequel that came out a year later after Blair Witch Project, which, you know, cashed in on the, you know, the fame at that time. That movie, it's not good. It's not a good movie, but it is it is entirely different than the Blair Witch Project, which is something I kind of admire. Like, it went its own direction, and it's somewhat ahead of its time by being very meta about what it's trying to do. It's just not a good movie. That's the main problem with it. It's just, you know, it's bad. Like, so this movie brings us back to, you know, what you basically expect from a movie set in the world of Blair Witch, which is, you know, people in woods, found footage, whatnot. And so if that's it, Peter, what'd you think of this one?
This one, I'm a big fan of Attengard and his writer. Who's the writer?
Is it Simon Scott? Barrett.
Simon Barrett.
Yes.
I really like The Guest. I love You're Next. So I was like totally excited when I heard that The Woods was actually Blair Witch. I would say it's like an 88 minute movie. So it's like a 90 minute movie or whatever. But yeah. I'd say about halfway through, we have six characters instead of three. So we've got twice as many. And about halfway through the movie, I actually was really liking it. I thought that I really liked I liked the drones. I like the sort of GoPro-esque camera. Well, they're not GoPro. They're the weird cameras in their on their Bluetoothy like type of thing. I really thought all the new camera stuff worked really well. I liked pretty much all the performances, and I thought they did a good job in the middle. How much do we talk spoilers?
Don't spoil the whole thing, but you know, you can be vague.
They introduce, from what I remember, they introduce sort of a new element to the legend, I guess, that I thought was really effective. And the first person.
Oh, I know. Yeah. Okay. I know what you're referring. Yeah. They expand the mythology.
That I thought was fresh. They made it fresh. And so halfway through
expanded in a way that's, I guess, because I think the first film, it has that element too. It just makes it more explicit in this film as far as, you know, being lost essentially.
Right. 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 But I actually really liked that. I was like, oh, that's kind of a cool idea. I was like, that's a way of like expanding on the original. It doesn't feel like it breaks it, but it feels like, oh, this is something new. And the first person who dies, I thought was pretty creepy. I was like, wow, that's a pretty creepy image. I thought that was pretty effective. So all of that, as we're heading into the last act, I was like, this is really good. I was like, and I'll say this. In the beginning of the movie, you see very early, just in a quick way, I think, as I recall, there's four main characters, and then two characters end up joining them. And the two characters, one of them in their house, the guy has got like a Confederate flag.
Yeah.
And so obviously one of the lead characters is African American, and you kind of see like the look of like, what's this going to mean? And then you see later the Confederate flag guy has his blaring like heavy metal music.
Yeah.
But he doesn't seem like an asshole. It's just like, okay, I really liked that. I was like, okay. I was like, this is interesting. Are they making a statement about where we are in the world? Like, where is this going? I was like, I'm curious, because they didn't really do that kind of stuff in the original movie. Okay, so having said all that, all the stuff that I liked about it and all the promise, I was pretty let down with the end. I thought it really relied too much on, in a way, it kind of reminded me of Rob Zombie's Halloween, where the first part of it is like, huh, this is interesting. Let's see what Michael Myers is like in an institution.
And then when they actually remade Halloween,
right. And they're like, now we need to speed through the greatest hits of Halloween. I kind of felt that's what they did here. And I was like, eh. I'm like, you can't really top the way the original is. The first time you see those moments near the end is pretty good. You can't really redo that. Especially the way they do it. You can't just do more of it. Again, I'm trying not to spoil it. But so that left me a little cold. I don't know. I'm a fan of Wingard. I think it's obviously way more well made, for sure.
Yes.
I don't know. It's weird to me. I've been thinking this whole time, I think Don't Breathe is very effective, and I'm kind of looking forward to seeing it again. But my big thing about Don't Breathe is I always feel like, except for Stephen Lang, I always feel like it's kind of shallow. Like, it's just really entertaining, but I don't know if there's a lot of meat there. This movie, I felt they were kind of trying to put some meat on the bones, but then I don't think they really did. So I'm not sure. I guess Don't Breathe is still better, because at least that is still just effective for what it is.
Well, clearly it's better to you, because you're saying you can't wait to see Don't Breathe again, and you're explaining all the things you had wrong with Blair Witch.
No, but I'm telling you the things I really liked about Blair Witch. Genuinely, halfway through, I genuinely was like, this is really terrific. I really like this. What about you?
Well, I kind of agree with you. Like, I may or may not like it a little bit more. I think that's negligible, though, because I think it is it's a bit of a mixed bag. But I did appreciate, you know, the quality a little bit more as far as, you know, from a technical standpoint. Although it does make me think, you know, overthink a lot of things involving the nature of the found footage, because you know, I'm of two heads about these kinds of things. When you explicitly say that you recover footage and like cobble it together, because I think, okay, so who are these editors that are like taking this footage and somehow they can create like genuine tense scenes through their editing skills, but also not shy away from showing all the jarring new camera takes and what have you. It's like, what kind of tricks are they trying to play here? If they're supposedly just trying to show me like the last remaining clues about these people that died, like presumably, why am I seeing it in such a stylish way? That's obviously, it's more of a, that's a rhetorical question, you know, because it's obvious, you know, it's made for entertainment. You're not supposed to really dissect the nature of how this film was assembled. But, you know, when a movie's telling me straight up, here's the last surviving footage, is like, well, okay, someone edited this some way. Like, who was responsible for that? Getting into the actual film, I would say it's more likable, I guess, if you know what I mean, Peter. Like,
I
think that, you know, the bickering going on between the three and the Blair Witch Project, it got on my nerves. Like, it's supposed to, you know, by default, that's supposed to make you think it's more authentic because people would actually argue this way. But at the same time, the movie, you know, it's, I think the Blair Witch Project is what, like 105. It's like an hour 40, maybe something like that. Like you might be right.
Yeah.
You know, for three characters to occupy the screen for that long and basically just argue for almost the entire time, that can be a little grating. This film, it's leaner, you know, it's cleaner as far as the production quality goes. And, you know, there's more people to, you know, follow, come to understand in some way, and just basically get behind in this. And I was kind of happier to do so for the most part. I think there's a big reliance throughout, you know, the first two thirds on jump scares based on how the camera moves, that are kind of unfortunate, because it's like, okay, how many times are we going to toy around with this kind of stuff? And there's a lack of further utilization of clever things, like such as the drone camera, where if you have a drone, it feels like there's a lot of possibilities there, but they don't do anything with it at all besides fly it up and then it comes back down again. Like, that's entirely it, save for one scene that could have been anything besides the drone and caused the same result. So it's like, why do they have a drone if they're not going to really use it? And you getting to, you know, it's hard to not talk about where the end goes, but the end, things ramp, as in most found footage movies, things ramp up tremendously. And I would say, like, I liked what they were doing with the end there, because it becomes a haunted house movie, essentially. That's, it becomes like the, it becomes a haunted house on steroids in terms of what it's trying to do. And I get what you're saying as far as you can't really, when you make that first movie, it's hard to kind of recreate that same scenario because it's fresh, it's new, and you don't know what to expect. This, I think it comes and goes of what you're expecting. I think in one hand, it channels exactly what you're, you know, trying to achieve from the first film. But I think that it delivers a little bit more as far as the imagery that you're seeing. And I was really admiring that. And I was also admiring that there's a lack of dialogue. There's a lot of visual storytelling going on with that final act. You get into certain characters and the kind of very precarious situations they're trapped in. I was, you know, I was into that tension. I was into seeing where that was going to take me, because I was like, okay, well, how are they going to get out of this one? Because it's not just dropping everything and saying, all right, that's it. Like, it's still, it's like, oh, we're going to continue on with this for an extended period of time. So,
I see what you're saying.
I think, I know, we're being very vague about this, but I feel like,
because
the first film obviously had a lot of limits as far as what it could show you or whatnot. This film, whether or not it shows you, you know, a Blair Witch of some kind, or, you know, anything that's more than just implied supernatural activity, I think there's a promise that seems to be more fulfilled than what you would get out of the Blair Witch Project, which I can admire. I admire, like, and you talk about like the developments of the mythology or whatnot. I think those are all key aspects that I think it makes not necessarily just purely for like Blair Witch Project fans, but people that like, you know, found footage movies in general, or the ones that are stubborn enough to, you know, keep going expecting every single secret to be revealed and only be disappointed by not having that. Though, you know, that audience, I think, gets what they kind of want out of a movie like this.
I think you're right. I think you're right. You know what's weird for me is that one thing I wanted to mention that when you were talking about the whole, you know, this thing is cobbled together and it's cobbled together in a way that obviously makes it a dramatic movie and how it would be that way. One thing I will say I give them props for, as I recall, the Blair Witch Project has no soundtrack. It can't because it's found footage, right?
Yes.
This movie, they come up with an interesting idea with these weird, these booming sounds in the woods.
Uh-huh.
And it works as like a faux soundtrack, which I thought was pretty clever. I was like,
it's the same as Paranormal Activity to an extent, where like whenever evil happens, the bass starts rumbling, right? Like there's a clever difference going on in the film when something evil is around compared to when something evil isn't around that you can really recognize. And this movie has, I know what you're saying exactly. Like it has it's kind of a cheat if you want to talk about cheats in a movie, but I've seen so many found footage movies, I don't really care as long as the movie's entertaining at this point.
Right. I guess to me though, the thing that brings me back to still really liking the Blair Witch Project is that like I don't have a problem with the bickering like a lot of other people do. A lot of people do, absolutely. I think the bickering works to show how isolated and crazy and angry and scared they're becoming. And the end of the Blair Witch Project, someone pointed this out to me that I actually hadn't really noticed, is that the end of the Blair Witch Project, part of what makes it kind of great as far as economy is that it's three characters. One has a black and white camera, right, a 16mm camera. One has a candy cam video camera, and the other one is the DAT audio guy. And the end of the movie, you basically have these three things out of sync.
Uh-huh.
In this chaos. And there's kind of a cool feeling, literally as an audience member, of not really knowing what to trust and what you hear and what you see. And in the new movie, you can't do that because all these cameras are much more high tech and they all have their own audio and stuff. And so it does make it easier to understand, absolutely. But I do think there's something a little lost by not having that disorienting feeling, I guess. Does that make sense? I feel like I think
there's a cliched effect of how the end of this movie plays out compared to that first movie, because you just don't know what's coming in the first.
Well, that too. But I'm actually saying from the level of using audio and video.
No, and I'm saying this movie is more cliche in what it's doing at the end compared to the first movie.
It's interesting. You're right, the runtime is long. You didn't find, again, no spoilers, but you didn't find in the last act, without saying too much, you didn't find some of the sequences, particularly with one of the lead characters, you didn't think it went on a little too long?
Oh, I do, for sure. I have that right here. I have notes on the thing. I have wild third act, comma, also overlong. I'm very aware that, yes, there's a particular sequence, while grueling, and understandably I get what they're trying to do, it does feel like, okay, we could speed this part up a bit, because we're not dropping the tension necessarily, but there's a, you know, when you, it's the same thing with like comedies. When you put a joke on top of a joke, it doesn't work that much. But if you put tension on top of tension, it's like, okay, I got enough tension right here. I don't need more tension. Like, you gotta kind of find the checks and balances of how to properly handle horror. And far be it for me to tell Adam Wingard and Simon Barrett how to do horror, but it does feel like, you know, there's bits here that could have been sped up in some way.
Now, are you a fan of Your Next and The Guest?
I really like The Guest. I like Your Next. I don't love Your Next in the same way some people do, but I like what they're going for in Your Next as far as how the tables get turned in that movie, and just because it's really fucking funny.
It's very funny. Yeah. I mean, for me, this is
What's his name? What's the director's name? Not Ty West, but the other one.
Adam Wingard.
Who's in the movie?
Who is that?
He made Drinking Buddies and Zach, you know, a fan.
Not offhand, no.
What is that guy's?
Joe Swanberg.
Yes,
Joe Swanberg is hilarious in that movie.
Like, he's terrific.
He's such a jerk in that movie, and it's great.
But this is for sure, to me, my least of the three Wingard Barrett collaborations. This is for sure third place for me. I prefer the other two.
They have made another movie called A Horrible Way to Die.
Which I haven't seen. So.
But yeah, it's, you know, it's lesser known compared to these, and they've, you know, also made various segments in the VHS films,
which I liked. I did like the VHS.
I like VHS 2 quite a bit. First one, not so much. But yeah, as far I could agree. As far as these, you know, three more mainstream films from them, yes, I would say this is the weakest one. But I still, I think there's enough to admire in what they're as far as, you know,
sure,
what I'm coming to expect from a Blair Witch movie. This pretty much delivers on what I would expect from a Blair Witch movie. It could be better, sure. You know, most movies can be better in some way. But I was more satisfied with this experience than I was with Snowden. I'd say
You know, one thing I'll say. Oh no. Oh wait. Yeah. Let's be clear that regardless of my mixed feelings about how this stacks up to the original, I definitely think, you know, this is. I mean, Adam Wingard, and I don't know how old he is. I'm assuming he's late 20s or early 30s.
33. Yeah.
Okay, he's 33. I mean, they're definitely more interested in playing with, you know, somewhat with filmmaking and trying to be inventive more than the Oliver Stone of today is. So in that way, yes, I think Blair Witch is a more compelling movie for me personally. Mm-hmm. Even if I don't think it's completely successful, it's more of like, oh yeah, this is interesting. You know, like there's stuff here, they're trying stuff. It doesn't all work. So yeah, of course.
I know he's doing the Death Note adaptation next, but I do hope that I think he was attached to it, and I saw the Devil remake for a while. I don't know if that's still in the pre-production process or whatnot, but I do hope that, you know, these two, Wingard and Barrett, they get back to something that's, you know, fresh again, because that's what I've, you know, admired about, you know, newer horror filmmakers, you know, like Fede Alvarez, you're talking about Don't Breathe. Like, I like, you know, regardless if it's ripping something off or whatnot, I do, like, admire seeing fresh takes on a genre of some kind or what have you.
Well, I mean, arguably, Fede Alvarez and Wingard, they both made, I'm pretty confident, you might say The Strangers, but which I like, but they've probably made the two best home invasion movies of recent years. You're Next and Don't Breathe are both pretty good home invasion films.
I have to think about that.
I mean, I like The Strangers. I do.
Hey, that's like 10 years old now. They're almost 10 years old.
The Purge. The Purge is another one, right?
Yeah, but I don't like The Purge. So
I agree. I don't. That's. I think. I think The Purge movies have strangely gotten better. Which is.
I really like Hush. Which is Mike Flanagan, and I like Mike Flanagan.
I like. I like
original.
I like Mike Flanagan a lot too.
Original horror voices out there.
Yeah. He's a Los Angeles guy, right? Flanagan?
Yeah, I believe so.
LA, yeah.
Underrated? Vacancy. It's a solid movie. Just say.
Is it underrated? I mean, I think it's about rated rights.
That's probably
fair. I mean, it's all right, you know.
That's a fair way to put it. It's about rated right.
But yeah. But no, if we were to go back to other thing, I mean, Zachy doesn't seem to like Blair Witch, so I would not recommend it. It's like, well, but... But I think if you, in general, like horror films and found footage and, yes, Blair Witch and stuff, yeah, I think it's worth seeing, you know, absolutely. What would you say?
Yeah, I would think if you're a fan of these, you're a fan of the Blair Witch Project and you're not looking to, like, get a whole new thing out of the Blair Witch Project, then I think this is a, you know, a suitable way to spend some time. I think if you like found footage type movies, it's a film that satisfies what you kind of come to expect with these ones. So yeah, I think see it in a theater with an audience that can like get scared off of what you're expecting. I think it satisfies.
I agree.
All right, great. That was those are our reviews for Snowden and Blair Witch. Let's move on now. Let's get to our sponsor real quick. Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Why Audible? Audible content includes more than 180,000 audiobooks and other similar programs for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or any kind of MP3 device. Additionally, Audible is offering our listeners a free audiobook download of your choice and a 30-day trial membership. Just go to audibletrial.com/outnowpodcast. Choose a book to download for free. It's just that easy. You can download a book for free. Check out their service. If you don't like the service, you can get rid of it, but you get to keep that book that you download for free. So be a winner. Read or listen at audibletrial.com/outnowpodcast. All right. Let's move on now to Out Now Feedback. Feedback. This is where I'm going to go over the various questions and answers on our Facebook page, facebook.com/outnowpodcast. I asked a number of questions on our Facebook page, and the listeners gave us a lot of responses. Peter and Zachy, feel free to, you know, chime in if you'd like to as well.
You got it.
And here's the first question. Favorite Oliver Stone film? Tyler writes, as a director, Natural Born Killers. As a writer, Scarface. Manish writes, Natural Born Killers. And Philip writes, JFK.
Yeah, JFK for me, too.
You know, I would have... I'm a big believer in, and Zachy, I'm not questioning, JFK is a great pick,
But I'm a big believer in like revisiting movies and stuff, like I did with Blair Witch. I love JFK at the time. I haven't seen it in forever. Gotcha. What I did watch, because it was on HBO Go last year, and I loved it.
You're not going to say Savages, are you?
No, I am not. No, I didn't really like Savage. I like the book, though. I really love Talk Radio. Wow. I mean, Talk Radio is a tight, kind of going with the Snowden thing. One guy, we're just with Eric Bogosian the whole time. Like, I think that's really terrific. I mean, you're probably right. JFK is probably better, I'm sure. But I was really like, wow, man, Talk Radio has aged well. I was like, this is really good. Yeah.
Talk Radio and Salvador are movies that I haven't seen in like a long time, but I recall being quite good. I mean, Stone films from like the 80s to early 90s.
Well, yeah.
Really, it's a really solid crop of movies.
Right, he does. Yeah, absolutely.
I think Platoon's pretty fantastic. That movie.
And I also like Born on the 4th of July.
Born on the 4th of July is a great one, too, that I haven't watched in years, but I really like that movie. Wall Street, I think, is fine. JFK is. I think that's one of the best edited movies, like, ever, like, as far as what they're trying to do. But that's all that said, I love Natural Born Killers. That is my favorite Oliver Stone movie.
I've only saw that once.
It has plenty of flaws to it, but I think it's such a wild piece of work if he made it today, he could probably even make it even better. But coming from at that time, I think it's such a unique movie of what it's trying to accomplish in the satire and the performances and the dark comedy and what have you. I just really like that movie.
Interesting.
So next question, what actors do you think do accents well? What about ones who are bad at them? Steven writes, Ben Mendelsohn from Bloodline. I never knew he was from Australia. Then I saw him in Animal Kingdom and Killing Them Softly. He's a great actor and should have done American films a long time ago. He'd be huge right now. Tyler writes, Hugh Laurie surprised me because I assumed he was American because of House. Off the top of my head, I have to say Joseph Gordon-Levitt is pretty bad at accents. Haven't seen Snowden yet, but Don John and The Walk were pretty bad. Manish writes, I don't usually care or even notice accents. For me, it becomes too easy to critique a performance based only on an accent, whether positively or negatively. Okay. Jason writes, Tommy Lee Jones has a good Irish accent, and I remember how he talks when he fades in and out of it. Joe writes, Jim Carrey did an excellent Austrian accent at the beginning of Dumb and Dumber. Nippon writes, Mel Gibson in Braveheart. I don't know if that's supposed to be good or bad. What are you saying there? And Adam just lists a bunch of people. Hugh Laurie, Idris Elba, Alan Cumming, Rose Byrne, Isla Fisher, Naomi Watts, and Nicole Kidman do a good job of hiding their accents.
Tom Wilkinson, I think, does really good accents.
Yeah.
Just if we're talking about Snowden. I think James McAvoy does a really good job of hiding his Scottish brogue.
Yeah.
Oh, go ahead.
No, just in terms of bad accents, Gerard Butler. I don't know what he's doing most of the
time. Yeah, I never saw The Walk because I thought Joseph Gordon-Levitt's accent looked really distracting. I was like, nope, I can't see this. And I regret it because everyone said the 3D was pretty amazing. And probably that was the only thing I should have seen. So, but, you know, I'm going to give – there are a lot of – you're right. There are a lot
Once The Walk comes out in 4K, I'm sure you'll be able to –
oh, that's
a 3D TV. You can
right. I will say there are a lot of Australian and British actors who do good American accents who can lose themselves, which is great. Mm-hmm. Actually, I did not see this weekend's Bridget Jones. And although I'm not a huge Bridget Jones guy, I actually think Renee Zellweger is not bad as an American doing a British accent. So I would actually give her a prop. I was really surprised in Bridget Jones how well she pulled that off. Going the other way from American to British, even though it's not like I love the movies, but I give her props.
Obviously, this is the Johnny Depp honorary award because he does all kinds of stuff, regardless if it's good or bad. So we can.
Right.
I think the entire cast of Black Mass is obviously amazing, right? That's where we stick with that for all those Bostons. Jack Nicholson in The Departed, also great, right? Is that all right? Favorite performance from an Oliver Stone film. Philip writes Costner and JFK, and Manish writes Juliette Lewis, and Woody Harrelson in Natural Born Killers.
That's so funny. It's funny because I'm really curious about rewatching Natural Born Killers because I did not like Woody Harrelson or Juliette Lewis. They're the problems I had. But
if you want to talk about great accents, by the way, Robert Downey Jr.'s Australian accent in Natural Born Killers is something.
I'll probably go with Cruise.
I was going to say Cruise also. I think maybe because it's it's a movie entirely focused around his character.
Yeah, I go with Cruise.
That's even might be a career award for Cruise. Like, he's terrific in that movie.
Yeah. I'm gonna say Costner. I'm gonna echo. I like Tom Cruise a lot in Born on the 4th of July, but I'm gonna go with Kevin Costner. I think that's like the quintessential Kevin Costner performance. That sort of is inclusive of everything that he does well as an actor.
I'm not a Costner fan. I don't know if you know this, Zachy. So it's like I just don't care about Costner.
Well, and that's my point. I mean, I think that.
I get what you're saying. Yeah, as far as the things that he's capable of, he's really putting forward in this movie particularly.
Yeah.
It just, I don't know. There's a scene right at the beginning when, like, JFK is assassinated and he's looking at the TV hearing. He's like, oh, no. And I'm like, okay, here we go.
I can't argue with that. That's really
to
fun.
His credit. I think Costner's been better in recent years in things. I think is as older man actor.
I think, I mean, if when you look at him in stuff like Draft Day and
Open Range is my go-to. I think
Open Range is excellent.
It's a very understated role that he has in that movie.
Yeah, getting older has benefited him as an actor,
which in a bit it tends to benefit a lot of, you know, kind of
former leading men
that I never think really left much of an impact, but kind of grown into it.
Yeah.
Except Matthew Modine, obviously, as we talked about in our Stranger Things podcast. But that's a different story. What are your favorite films involving some kind of conspiracy theory and getting out the truth? Philip Wright's The Insider. That's a terrific answer.
It is, yeah.
I think All the President's Men kind of jumps to mind in that one.
I'm going to say State of Play. That's an underrated, like, people don't talk about that movie, but I think it's fantastic.
I feel like we've talked about this before. I think you might have brought it up in another thing we did, another podcast. I can't remember why I don't like the end of State of Play, but there's something that I don't like about where I like most of that movie up until like what I consider to be a plot hole, but I have no recollection of what it was to really get into it. That said, I do think it was, because that was one of the first, not one of the first, but that was when Ben Affleck was starting to get things back in.
Road to respectability, Ben Affleck.
Yeah. Jason Bateman, I remember, has like a really good role in that one. His dramatic performance.
A lot of, I mean, Helen Mirren is good in it. I mean, it's a lot of really good character parts for good actors. Yeah, well,
I do recommend the BBC series. It's like a
which is excellent.
It's like
excellent.
It's a 3-part or 6-part series, but it's that's really solid too. Yeah.
What are we? Yeah, it's the governor. What's his name? The guy in the Affleck role. You know, the governor from Walking Dead.
Drawn
a blank.
So yeah, that guy.
David Morrissey.
Thank you, David Morrissey.
Well, I mean, I guess how are we defining conspiracy? Because like, only because you guys just said State of Play.
What do you think?
I mean, well, Spotlight, it is basically a bunch of reporters uncovering something that's...
There's a force that's hiding something.
Yes, there is a force hiding. And that was, I mean, that's a great movie. I mean, like, yeah.
Next question. Do you like the Blair Witch Project? Any memories? Nippon writes, yes, I remember me and my brothers running some forested areas after watching the movie and yelling Blair Witch in a mocking way. What a travesty that movie was. Only thing I got from it was a headache. So not a fan for Nippon. Brad writes, LOL, that movie ruined my dad's VCR. I don't know what Blockbuster or previous customer did to the tape, but it got stuck, and even disassembling it, I couldn't get it all out intact. Hashtag real horror. Manish writes, literally just saw it for the first time, but I remember being scared by it just from the hype. I grew up in Maryland, though nowhere near where the woods take place, but the woods scared me. All right. Obviously, we already went over our thoughts on Blair Witch, so we can move on. Any favorite found footage movies, thoughts on the genre in general? Manish writes, I have a soft spot for Paranormal Activity 3. I think that's the period piece one. He's correct. Usually I'm not a fan. It'd be cool to see a found footage drama, like scenes from a marriage type movie, but found footage. Greg writes, I'm a found footage junkie. Afflicted, Creep, The Den, and The Last Broadcast are probably my favorites. Nippon writes, the first two Wreck movies. Philip writes, don't like the genre, but I did like End of Watch and Earth to Echo. And Brad writes, VHS and VHS 2, those were awesomely scary. I would second the first two Wrecked movies. I think those are not only some of the best found footage movies, but some of the best horror movies of recent years. I also really like Cloverfield. I'm a huge Cloverfield fan.
I haven't seen Cloverfield in a while. I liked it at the time.
I said on this podcast that I think Cloverfield's something of a modern classic in terms of what it tried to do and what it accomplished.
I do really like Wreck though. Those two are pretty good. Yeah, they're really good. What else? I mean, I love the Blair Witch Project. I don't know if that doesn't count, but I mean, I think that's great. I love the first Paranormal
Activity. I love the third Paranormal.
I like the third one too.
Oscillating fan camera is like one of the coolest things ever, like ever in a horror movie.
I do, but actually, it's funny. One of your readers just talked about the whole scenes from Marriage. I actually think what makes Paranormal the first one so good is it is basically the crumbling of a relationship. It's not a marriage, but I mean that's why that's so effective. Is it's because as I recall, it's them moving in together for the first time, right? I think that's. That's basically the crux of the movie.
I don't recall if they moved in. I think they were there and it just started happening.
Maybe, but meaning it's we are starting to see their relationship crumble, right? Their long term relationship is starting to disintegrate, and that's kind of the metaphor or whatever is the supernatural element. I actually really think that's pretty effective in the first Paranormal Activity. I like the third one too. I agree. That's the VHS one. Yeah.
That's the only one I've watched twice. So I'm struggling to remember how strong that metaphor really is. I was like, I feel like it's more of just it's because of a supernatural force that's getting between them that's making them like really go through some stuff.
Well, but I mean, that's the thing about horror movies is that it's always that you're right. It's like, how much are we saying it is?
I don't know if that subtext is really there or not because I just haven't watched it. It's recent enough.
No, yet. I haven't seen it in forever. So I mean, like that's just what I remember. But
you know, I will say, it's just other fun footage movies. Gareth Evans of The Raid, who did is it Evans or Edwards? Which one's Star Wars?
Gareth
which
Edwards, Monster, right?
Monster's Edwards, right?
Yeah, it's good.
I was gonna say Evans of The Raid films. He did that segment in VHS 2 about the cult, which is freaking amazing.
Like it is really good.
It's incredibly scary. It's incredibly kinetic. It's co-directed by him and another director who's coming out with a new film called Headshot, an action movie coming out this fall that stars the lead from The Raid, Iko Uwais, I believe. So I'm looking forward to that as an action movie. But yeah, his VHS 2 segment, VHS 2 in general, I really like. I think it's shorter and the shorts are more effective, so I really like that one over the first VHS. But that one in particular, I had to like stop the movie for a second because like, geez, that was crazy.
I would also like to say that in a weird way, if anybody plays video games, that did you ever play that PT teaser?
The PT teaser, I downloaded not knowing what it was. I played through part of it, and it was late at night, and I was like, why am I getting scared right now? This is not what I signed up for, and I turned it off.
Yeah, that is absolutely terrifying. Like, and it essentially owes itself to found footage, which actually, in a strange way, I forgot to bring up. I actually thought that the new Blair Witch movie kind of owes to video games in a way because of the first person, because of the way the camera is and the way they're following people. Yeah,
because they use like earpiece cameras. So your first person perspective without hands being hindered in any way kind of thing.
Right. But yeah, like that was, you know, I agree. I very terrifying. There's so many found footage is weird. I was just talking off podcast with somebody else about how I feel like maybe just because I'm a little older, but like it's funny because Halloween and Texas Chainsaw Massacre spawned so many slasher movies in the 80s. A lot of them are terrible. And yet, for some reason, I could pretty much watch any slasher movie, no matter how awful. There's just something I like about the slasher genre.
Uh-huh.
Found footage movies, of course, I will watch any of them, but I get more annoyed when a found footage like Devil Inside or whatever, when I'm just like, oh, that was such a waste of time. It gets me more annoyed. And these are both things where something creates a subgenre of horror and there's a lot of mediocre product. But for some reason, I think I'm more towards the slasher side. What
if
about
I
you?
Had to speculate on that, I think it's because the aesthetic for a found footage movie invites you to kind of be closer with the character regardless of how much character shading there is. And so when a movie disappoints you, like Devil Inside, where it just kind of abruptly ends, and most of them kind of do, you kind of feel cheated out of an experience, you know? Or a slasher movie doesn't require too much attachment to what's going on. It's not as personal because it's a third-person perspective. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, and I can, and with a slasher, with a bad slasher movie, I can just revel in the bad acting and the silliness of it or whatever. You're right. But yeah, that might be true.
All right. Let's see. We got no questions this week, which is a bit of a shame. I like answering the questions that we get asked. But yeah, Phil, thanks everyone for the listeners for providing answers on our Facebook page. And again, we ask questions every week on the Facebook page, facebook.com/podcast. So feel free to send in your answers when we get to this segment. That was enough feedback. Let's move on now to what time is it here? Let's move on. Let's get in See, this is why is this loading so slowly? Let's get into some games. That was, of course, the improv theme for games. Happy to put that one together. That was inspired by Snowden. This week's game I have for you guys, if anyone who listened last week should be familiar with this one, it is Taglines. Movie Taglines, where I will read the tagline for a movie and you have to guess what movie I am referring to. The theme of this week's Taglines is Oliver Stone films. So the two of you I'm going to read taglines to from Oliver Stone movies and you have to guess what movie I'm referring to. Buzz in with your name, as in, say, Peter, and then name an Oliver Stone movie you think it is. Understand?
Yeah.
Got it. No problem.
Okay. So here's the first one. Some of these might be easier than others. In the media circus of life, they were the main attraction.
Zachy. Natural Born Killers.
Natural Born Killers is the correct answer.
Nice.
Here's the next one. The first casualty of war is innocence.
Zachy.
Wow, damn it.
Zachy.
Go ahead.
Platoon.
Platoon is the correct answer. Okay. Play or be played?
Zachy.
Zachy?
Any Given Sunday?
Any Given Sunday is the correct answer.
Yeah, good one.
Here we go. Gordon never gives up.
Peter.
Zachy.
Peter. Yeah. Peter?
Now I'm afraid. I'm still going to go with Wall Street, but now part of me is like, oh, what if it's Wall Street 2? But no, Wall Street.
Incorrect.
Is it Wall Street 2?
Zachy?
Wall Street 2?
Full title.
Money Never Sleeps.
Well, that's correct, Zachy.
darn it.
It's almost like I did that on purpose.
And the never would have given, if had I remember the full title, that would have told
I
me.
I mean, why would it be Gordon Never Gives Up if you see the first Wall Street?
We,
sport it. Why am I walking this movie?
Yeah, you're right.
Here's the next one. A story of innocence lost and courage found.
Zachy.
Zachy.
Born on the 4th of July?
Born on the 4th of July.
Yeah, I was seeing this part before.
Here's the next one. The story that won't go away.
Zachy.
Zachy.
You know what? I was going to say W, but I don't think that's right.
It isn't. Peter. You got an answer?
JFK?
JFK is the correct answer.
Okay. JFK.
Oh, irony. How bitter thy
sin. And it's your favorite movie, yes.
Here's the next one. Every dream has a price.
Dream. Oh, Peter.
Peter?
Is it Scarface?
Nope.
Every dream has a price.
No, it's not.
Three. Two, one.
Peter Nixon.
Incorrect. The answer was Wall Street.
Oh, I was going to say that.
Oh,
when you buzzed in, I really thought you were going to get it. Here's the next one. Fortune favors the bold.
Peter. Alexander.
Alexander is good. How'd you get that one so quickly?
I don't know. That one just popped in my head. I don't know.
Okay. Here's the next one. He had greatness within his grasp.
Peter.
Yeah.
His grasp. Nixon?
Nixon is correct.
Okay, yeah.
Making a surge for the comeback on top here. Let's see.
All right.
Well, here's the next one. The Last Neighborhood in America.
Is
it like Salvador? The Last Neighborhood in America.
I've never seen Salvador, although obviously that's not America, but
Last Neighborhood in America.
What movie are we not? It can't be W. What, Peter?
Yeah?
Is it Savages or something? I'm trying to think of...
No.
Oh, wait. Peter.
Okay.
U-turn?
Incorrect. The answer was Talk Radio.
Oh, my fave. Now the irony is on me.
I feel better now.
Yes, exactly.
Here's the next one. A Life Misunderestimated.
Zachy.
Zachy.
W
is correct. Here's the last one. The ceremony is about to begin. I'm going to read it again in a different way. The ceremony is about to begin.
Oh, Peter.
Peter.
Of course. one of my favorites, The Doors.
The Doors.
Man,
is
Val,
the correct
actually,
answer.
I forgot. Val Kilmer is so good in that.
Apparently, my Jim Morrison is spot on.
Yeah.
I'll be able to be sure to break out that one. Break on through with it, actually. All right. Peter, despite making a valiant attempt to come through in the end, Zachy is still the winner on this week's games.
Yay!
I will say I had bonus questions ready in case you tied. And I'm going to ask, what is Oliver? Who's Oliver? Oliver and the Chipmunks, love him. What is Oliver Stone's biggest film at the box office?
It's either, I'm going to say JFK, but it could be Born. JFK?
JFK is his worldwide biggest film. What do you think his highest domestic film is?
Maybe then it's Born. Born?
Yeah, I'm going to say Born on the 4th of July, too. Yeah.
It is Platoon.
Oh!
All the way from 86, Platoon, with 138. His next highest is Any Given Sunday for domestic, and then JFK.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Worldwide, it's JFK and then Alexander.
Well, there we go.
Yeah. Yeah, Born, I think, is like in fifth or something. Like, it's not terribly low, but yeah, it's not all that high either. I was surprised that nothing broke Platoon, apparently, for Oliver Stone movies. But yeah, that's games. Let's move on now. Let's get to Out Now Presents What's Out Now. These are movies that are coming out on Blu-ray or DVD this week, and we have a few here. First up, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Out of the Shadows. Well, feel free to have a yay or nay type response to any of
this. You know what? I unabashedly loved this movie. I stand against the wind. Yeah, I had a blast.
I didn't see it. I missed it.
It's better than that first one. It's fun. It's really silly, but it's fun.
It's the Turtles movie I wanted to see when I was 8 years old. So that's my bar, and it soared past that.
Let's see. Neighbors 2 out this week.
I have not seen that one.
Oh, I really like Neighbors 2. Yeah, I thought it was good. Solid.
Free State of Jones. This was the Matthew McConaughey film.
Yeah, I have it. It is not good. Oh, it's not good? Well, all right. There's the answer. Okay.
Let's see. Labyrinth 4K 30th Anniversary Edition.
4K. Wow.
Get all that Bowie.
I like Labyrinth. I think Labyrinth is a movie I like that probably isn't a very good movie.
Not as egregious as maybe some of the other ones, but I think it's fine. Let's see. Beauty and the Beast 25th Anniversary Edition comes out this week.
Classic.
Let's see.
Although as much as I love Beauty and the Beast, I always hate that he turns into that bland-looking white dude at the end. But spoiler alert, if someone somehow hasn't seen Beauty and the Beast, but I kind of wish he'd stay the scruffy beast. But it's a great movie.
Well, that's why those direct-to-video sequels didn't have him as the guy. It had him still as the beast.
Exactly.
Was it Enchanted Christmas?
Exactly.
Next up, High Noon. Classic Western.
Never seen it. Is that Gary Cooper?
Gary Cooper.
That's fantastic.
G-Coops, as I call him.
Which they're remaking. Did you see that? They're doing a contemporary
version. They're doing a modern reboot of High Noon. Was anyone attached to it?
I feel like there were some names I can't remember off the top of my head. But I think it's actually a good idea.
Let's see. Cat People and Blood Simple make their Criterion Collection debuts this week.
Wait, which Cat People? The one with Natasha Kinski?
No, the older one.
That was like one of my first crushes was Natasha Kinski. I've never seen the original.
Yeah, the original Cat People.
I've never seen it. It's supposed to be good, right?
Yeah, well, it's on Criterion, so you kind of...
Well, there you go.
and Blood Simple, which is fantastic.
Blood Simple's great, yeah.
Let's see. Twin Peaks Collection. So, like, the show and the movies. Is there one movie or two movies? Just one movie.
That already came out. They did a Blu-ray of the movie.
There's, like, another version of it coming out.
Because it comes with Firewalk with Me. I still have not finished Twin Peaks. I'm halfway through that thing.
Now there's another version of it.
I got to finish that before.
You've only done one peak.
I've done one peak, not the two. Not the Twin Peaks, yes.
Let's see. Salem's Lot and It make their Blu-ray debut this week.
Never seen It. I hear it's terrible, but I'm curious about it.
The first half of It is great as far as like scaring you about clowns and whatnot. The second half gets away from the clown stuff and is not as great anymore.
Yeah, it falls apart a little bit.
Yeah, it's like a big spider thing. It's not as scary as, you know, Tim Curry.
Great cast, though.
It is a great, John Ritter is in there.
John Ritter, Ned O'Toole, Tim Reed. What's his name? John Boy from the Waltons.
Yeah. John Boy from
Richard Thomas.
He's in Battle Beyond the Stars. He's the star of that movie.
Oh, it's also and Cat's Eye.
Circle the square.
Yeah,
you forgot Cat's Eye.
Cat's oh, he's play? In that.
No. When you said Salem Lot and it, it's also Cat's Eye. It's three oh. Stephen Kings.
Okay, I missed
Cat's Eye is the one with the short films, right?
Yes.
The short stories. I remember that being cheesy 80s like movie or whatever, as I recall.
Got plenty of TV Stephen King movies coming out this week.
Right.
It, not the 90s Shining, though. I think that's already out, actually.
See, what I'm excited for is that Prince triple, that the Prince Blu-ray thing that's in purple Blu-ray casing. Uh-huh. Can't wait for that. I think that's in October.
Stop jumping ahead on my segment here. I'll get to that when I get to that. And lastly, on Blu-ray this week, The Thing, Scream Factory Collector's Edition.
Oh, I can't wait. I want that so bad.
You know, Scream Factory does a great, and Shout Factory do a great job of their releases, and they got a bevy of new special features for The Thing, which will look and sound better than ever. So there you go. That's on Netflix. Now let's move on to Extremely Cool. These are movies that are now on Netflix that I can recommend. Luther Season 4 is now on Netflix. If you're a fan of Luther with Idris Elba, then here's his latest latest escapades involving Luther. Also now on Netflix, Zootopia. Because Disney has a great Netflix deal now. So there you go. You can watch. If you haven't seen Zootopia already, it's now on Netflix. There you go.
What is it, like 90 days from home vid to
something
to
like Netflix? That, yeah.
Yeah. It's crazy.
Yeah. And let's see, next week's show. Next week, we're talking about The Magnificent Seven, starring Denzel Washington, Chris Pratt, Ethan Hawke, and Vincent D'Onofrio, among others. And so, yeah, that's the plan for next week's show. We'll be talking about the Anton Fuqua remake of The Magnificent Seven. And so there's that. Last thing we do here, what should people see now, and what should you plan to see next? Zachy, what should people go and see in theaters right now?
I'm going to recommend Southside with you. I enjoyed that. I don't know if that's still playing, but I think it's a sweet little movie that's worth checking out.
And what do you plan to see next?
Magnificent Seven tomorrow.
All right.
Yeah.
Peter.
The next thing I'm excited about is the new Tim Burton. What's it called? Paragum? Or what's the name?
I just calling it the new Tim Burton movie because I cannot remember the title. Miss Peregrine's Home for Peculiar Children. That's a mouthful. Yeah. Miss Peregrine's Home for Peculiar Children. What are the sequels going to be called? Miss Peregrine's Home for Peculiar Children. That's the name of the movie.
Tim Burton has made his movie again.
No, I think this one looks good.
It's coming off of Big Eyes, which is really good.
Yeah, I like Big Eyes. And I like Don't Breathe. I'm glad that people are seeing Don't Breathe. I think it's good.
Let's see. I actually had Don't Breathe and Kubo on the list here of things that people should go see because those are just good movies. Storks is what my lovely girlfriend and I will be seeing tomorrow. So we'll have the inside scoop on Storks.
Enjoy.
This weekend. That's going to do it for this week's episode of Out Now with Aaron and Abe. You can find more of my work on my personal blog, thecodeofzeke.com. You can find my written movie reviews there, as well as over at whysoblue.com for all the Blu-ray reviews and other stuff, and at Twitter at Aaron's PS4. I also write at Screen Rant Daily. Peter.
Oh, people can find me on pretty much all social media at Pajamo, P-A-J-M-O. And I'm currently writing for Game Revolution.
Zachy?
I'm at my website, zakiscorner.com. That's Z-A-K-I-S corner. That's also my Twitter handle and Instagram. And I want to give a shout out to my new episode of the Nostalgia Theater podcast. We're celebrating 50 years of Star Trek this month. And for this new episode, I talked to Star Trek novelist and comic book writer Glenn Greenberg. And we watch the original pilot, or the second pilot of the original Star Trek series. And we talk through that. And I think it's a fun listen.
All right. You can find all the other episodes of Out Now with Aaron and Abe over on iTunes as well as on Audio Boom. You can also find our older episodes over at hhwled.com and on SoundCloud. You can find us, you can email us your thoughts on anything we talked about this week over at outnowpodcast@gmail.com. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/outnowpodcast, or at Twitter at outnow_podcast. And of course, there's our Tumblr page, outnowpodcast.tumblr.com. Why it's there, no one knows. And so with that said, Peter, Zachy, thank you both for joining us today.
Yeah,
thank you.
This has been a lot of fun. Got a lot of even some Matrix discussion in there. So we know lots of bases covered on this week's podcast. And until next time, when we see what it's like for Denzel to ride on a horse, that's going to do it for this week's episode. So until next time, so long and goodbye.
Stand in the shadow. Cheer the gallows. This is a roundup. This is love.
is replacing with a trailer for Snowden. He starts talking. He's like, what's going on with these illegal SFFs? Reese, he finds, puts on another American accent. Is like, well. And Nick Cage is there. It's like, we used to make computers like this. And it goes on like that. All right.
Oh, I was hoping you'd keep going. Yeah.